When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
And welcome to another podcast at slysoffice.com. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. John, do you think that, back in the days they were building the White House, whoever the incoming president was threatening whoever was building the facility with canceling the contract? Do you think that happened?
No, I really doubt that. However, in all honesty, if you go back and look at how the White House was built and a lot of Washington was built, it may have been less contractual.
More at the barrel of a gun.
I was going to say, I don't even know if it was guns per se, but I would suggest that I'm not sure every worker was a willing employee.
Oh, well, you know, you could say the same for Trump Tower.
Well, there you go. Times change, but some things never do.
It's pretty clear this was a retaliatory move. Donald Trump didn't like the Boeing CEO's comments about trade. And, I'm trying to sort through all this. I'm kind of enjoying some of this.
Of course. And, you know, I don't want to, burst your balloon here and make you, lose any respect for Mr. Trump.
I don't have any respect for Mr. Trump. I'm just having fun watching
that
this.
That was a joke.
Well, I understand.
But, other presidents have done this as well. Other presidents have delayed, canceled, renegotiated arrangements as regards transportation and vehicles, because it does seem as if when any kind of transportation vehicle for the White House is being built, that people tend to really put the extra coat of paint on.
Well, look, I think most Americans are probably perfectly fine with this.
I think, of all political parties,
I don't think they have a problem. I do think, though, the reason that he did it or how he does it sometimes, he's going to box himself into a corner at some point.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not going to be at the point or in the way that people, I think a lot of people think, or a lot of pundits think. Here's what's going to happen. There's going to be too many I's to dot and T's to cross. And at a certain point...
Now, what do you mean by that?
We have a massive economy. We have, largest economic engine in the world, essentially. And you can't have the President of the United States, constantly in there, turning this screw, pounding in that nail, basically making the machine work. At some point, the president has to operate on a systemic level, i.e. step above things and say, look, here's how I want it to work overall. And so it makes for good headlines, and our dumb beast media, which doesn't know how to cover economics or politics, loves the storyline where, Donald Trump heard about this and did that, right? Very simple thing. But at some point, it's not going to be possible for him to hear about everything and do everything. And that's, I think, where some of this is going to crash into the wall, so to speak. It already has as regards the carrier deal. And I think it's fascinating in the last 24 hours, as you've watched the carrier union steelworkers step up and say,
I believe they said he lied his ass off.
That's right, and that he is still doing so. And, as the reality of this deal that he did with Carrier comes through, we learn, a couple things. Number one, first and foremost, that the majority of families that work for Carrier are going to have a kind of an unpleasant Christmas, right? That they're looking at a situation where if they're still working, they're not likely to be for that long. So that's number one, you know, all of his, you know, pats on the back. Number two, and this is far more important as regards to the broader conversation we're having, Donald Trump is a lousy negotiator. He's not good at what he does.
Well, first of all, I just want to make sure people know how he was disingenuous. He was including jobs that were never going to leave.
Yeah, about 300 of them, it sounds
350,
like.
And then another 80 jobs. So really, 430 of those were never going to leave.
That's right. And these are tech jobs, research jobs. Mm-hmm. And so they created a fantasy, which, you know, with all due respect to the Wall Street Journal, they actually had the numbers pretty right on the, you know, before Trump even got to Indianapolis. So it was possible to cut through all the bull on this early on. In fact, I wrote a piece for The Nation that, you know, went through all the numbers and basically critiqued Trump as a lousy economic development director for a small city. Donald Trump would very possibly be facing a review and perhaps even removal if he was the economic development director who cut this deal.
One of the MSNBC contributors and who's involved in finance in New York said one of the first things you learn when you go to New York is people in New York don't loan Donald Trump money.
Because not if they want it back.
Right. Well, most people who loan money want it back.
That is the funny thing about it. They actually want a little more back than they gave you.
Exactly.
That's how the whole thing works. And what happened here, but that's a different game. That's Donald Trump the grifter, right? You know, not following through on his own deal. But here is Donald Trump in this new role as negotiator-in-chief, right? His job is to negotiate better deals, to get better results. So you have a company, Carrier, which announces it's leaving. Lots of people step up and say, well, we really don't want you to leave. How can we make this thing work? There was never any question, I don't think, that there were going to be some tax breaks and some other benefits for Carrier available. They were on the table. That's how economic development works. But what happened with Trump is he comes wading in, he talks to the head of Carrier, and he promises tax breaks that aren't his to give, but he gives them and gets Pence to follow through on that. Then he promises, or appears to promise, at least suggests, federal tax policy shifts, regulatory shifts, all kinds of benefits and advantages for Carrier. You know, just a very, very good deal for the company. And Carrier says, well, okay, that sounds good to us. We'll keep some jobs here. That's exactly how economic development works. But what we found out is that Carrier's moving most of the jobs, shutting a factory in a town that's going to be really hard hit by this, Huntington, Indiana, and making very limited commitments as regards, you know, its long-term presence in Indianapolis.
Well, and
so
here's the thing.
Getting a good deal, he got a pretty lousy.
It's interesting, you know, I'm trying to determine whether what percentage of Donald Trump is a brilliant Svengali versus what percentage of Mr. Trump is Mr. Magoo. I'm trying to seriously. Because it's hard to tell. Some I think everybody assumes when he puts something out there and it works out, they ascribe some sort of brilliance to it, and I'm not sure that it always is that way. I do think Donald Trump has some dumb luck too.
Oh, I think he has a lot of dumb luck. And he also has failures. You know, as David K. Johnson and others point out, massive failures. And then he kind of pulls his, you know, bacon out of the fire by using pressure tactics, right? Not by, you know, doing things in some sort of smart negotiation, or maybe, depending on what you think of pressure tactics, as part of negotiation. But he ends up in a situation where he gets, you know, New Jersey casino oversight both to really bend in his favor, or, you know, New York development overseers to really bend in his favor. And, you know, he sort of comes out ahead by gaming the system effectively. Now that, you know, you can give him some credit for that. But
well, and taking the deduction on his investors' loss. How
about
that?
And, well, actually making money off gaming the process.
Right.
Not just gaming the process to survive,
right,
but actually coming out ahead. And where that becomes problematic is that, you know, I don't think Donald Trump minds creating jobs. I don't think that bothers him. I think he thinks that's kind of fun and kind of cool. And to that extent, it makes him a better player than a lot of corporate CEOs, who I think do mind creating jobs. They see it literally as a drag on their bottom line. Paying people is not something they like to do. That's why automation is taking off at such a level. But I think he likes creating jobs. I think he likes the ego boost from it all. But you'll notice that I'm using the word doesn't mind, or even maybe likes, not that that is his focus, not that that is his purpose. His focus and purpose is the advancement of Donald Trump, right? It's about him.
And well, now so, you really, you know, if he's in now you really boat, have wrecked my, you, no, no, just John, now you really have wrecked my day.
I'm sorry. I know this is a surprise to you, but I really want to emphasize that what I was just saying there. If he's in the lifeboat, he's the last one out of the lifeboat.
All right. So this whole Boeing thing happens yesterday at the same time. It is interesting. I don't think it's a complete coincidence that he threw that bomb out there. At the same time, Michael Flynn's son is being relieved of whatever duties he had after almost causing a shootout at the Comet Pizzeria in Northwest Washington, D.C. Now,
really scary, weird stuff there. Yeah, the whole thing.
But, you know, but then BuzzFeed and all these other people are pointing out that, you know, they fire the kid. Well, Michael Flynn is just as guilty as his kid is at putting out erroneous tweets with fake news stories. And Donald Trump has done it.
Where did the kid learn? Right?
The same place I learned road rage from, my father.
and you know, look, in this case, it doesn't look like the apple falls very far from the tree.
Nope.
And yes, of course. Look, Donald Trump is guilty of fostering fantasy, of literally pushing out lies. And he has not been adequately held to account for that. I give Brian Stelter at CNN, a few other people, credit for, you know, stepping up and beginning to actually say, look, you know, this guy's a conspiracy theorist, right? You know, he buys into and advances conspiracy theories that are false. And, you know, that is an important way to understand Trump. Now, is that going to blow up on him in the short term? Is that going to lead him to be held to account in the short term? No, it won't. But here's the interesting thing. This Flynn incident, the concerns about Flynn the father, all the concerns about Trump, and frankly about a lot of the people around him, is that they try to use information in a way that protects them and harms others. Now, that's not uncommon, and politicians have often done that. But where politicians get in the worst of all circumstances politically, and frankly, in all sorts of other ways, is when the people suddenly catch on to it, right? When the people catch on to the fact that you are willing to lie to them in order to protect or advance yourself, they never believe you again. I mean, it goes bad, and just ask Richard Nixon about it. He may have rehabilitated himself after being president, but he had to leave the presidency of the United States for that. And so it's important to recognize
now when he said
they're playing a dangerous game here.
When he said the president says it, you know, does it, it's not against the law. Donald Trump has already made that inference.
Yeah, but when Nixon said that,
uh-huh,
it's important to understand. When Nixon said that, he was still surviving politically. You know what I mean? He was speaking from what he thought of as a position of relative strength. Trump the same way. I'm just telling you that there's a tipping point that occurs where people recognize that they are being lied to. And that is lying. That's true of personal relationships. That's not something, this is not some big political construct. What happens if you recognize somebody you're doing business with or working with or in a relationship with, that, you know, anytime they get in a corner, they're going to lie to you.
But how many times has Scott...
You don't get in the corner with
them. You know, but because there's been this meme about the mainstream media being biased, and they've, you know, there appears to be no sort of arbiter of some sort of standard of honesty in this country anymore. Look at how many times Scott Walker has gotten away with blatantly lying, and yet he's been able to survive politically.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I mean, this gets us to the next stage, and why I do think it's very, very different between Wisconsin and the national stage. The national stage, Trump is covered intensively. We don't have much of a media system left in this country, but to the extent that it exists, it focuses on the presidency. That's not the case in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has very limited structural media system left, and this is a big deal to understand. When I was a kid, when I would go up to the Capitol, if you went into the press room, it was packed. It was literally an overwhelming crowd of reporters. That wasn't just true when I was a kid. That was true, you know, well into the 90s. You know, you really had an intensive level of coverage of state government, not just at the gubernatorial level, but down through it. That's overspy.
Superior had two
newspapers. You have to understand it.
The city of Superior had two newspapers.
Eau Claire did, right? Eau Claire had a couple papers. Green Bay had a couple papers. And you know what? All of those papers in Appleton and you know, Racine and Kenosha and these papers had people in the State House who looked at the affairs of their region, but also, you know, ambitious young reporters saying, hey, you know, I'm going to take a look at whether Scott Walker's telling the truth there.
Right. The Sentinel always made the Journal better by competing.
And that's all I'm saying. And we have wonderful journalists who still try, you're really good people, who really still try to keep the flag flying, you know, and do their best.
Are you talking about the MacGyver Institute?
Hey, you know, sometimes, man. But, no, but what I'm saying is that we do have people who really make a good effort here. And the problem is that it's sort of like that Woody Allen film, you know, where he's talking about the two older women at the automat in New York. And the one woman says, the food here is terrible. It's absolutely inedible. And the other woman says, yes, it's such a small portion. That's our media.
All right. Last night, Sherrod Brown, senior senator from Ohio, was on with Chris Hayes talking about this Buy American provision. Senator Baldwin, Senator Casey, and others want America's water infrastructure to be built with American workers and American supplies, American parts, American steel, American pipes.
Yep.
The Republicans in the House, this bill also came up in the House. Paul Ryan stripped it out all day yesterday. Using Twitter, Sherrod Brown was tweeting out to the president to stand up to Paul Ryan on this, and Donald Trump said nothing.
Yeah, I know. He has time to talk about literally Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live, but he doesn't have time to talk about core issues of his presidential campaign and his promises to America, right? Tells you a lot about Donald Trump. He'd also, I'll tell you, I can tell you why they don't want to talk about this, why they want desperately to avoid this. It's twofold. Number one, this is a big wampum deal. You actually make a commitment to American-made on water infrastructure. That's an immense amount of jobs. It's an immense amount of production that really matters. And we're going to have to do so much in this area over the next 20 years. That what Sherrod and a number of others, including some Republicans, have focused in on is a very profound issue. And I want to tell you something else about why it's so profound. Do you know who Rick Nolan is?
No.
Rick Nolan is the congressman from up in the Iron Range, up in northern Minnesota. And in his congressional district, Donald Trump won. Donald Trump didn't win by a little. Donald Trump won in double digits. And Rick Nolan was facing a millionaire opponent, was one of the number one, maybe the number one targeted Democratic incumbent in the country.
Oh, is that the guy was that the guy from Wisconsin? That sort of playboy who'd lived in Wisconsin that moved to Minnesota?
Yeah. Well, it's Bill Sweet Farm is who it is. It's his family. So anyway, he's got this young, very well-to-do opponent, all on message, with all the support from the national Republican infrastructure and his business ally. So Rick Nolan is 72, I believe. You know, not some glib social media guy. He's kind of very old-school Iron Ranger. And he's up against all this in a district that's voting overwhelmingly for Trump. And Rick Nolan won. And you know what he won with? You look at his ads, look at everything he did. He did a 100%, just about 100% Buy America campaign. He literally cut his ads in machine shops, holding up pieces of infrastructure and saying, this ought to be made in America. And he was able to get, in a very tight, very real race, he's able to get tens of thousands of people who voted for Donald Trump to come across and vote for him. Now, he did this as a very progressive Democrat who, you know, aligns with Mark Pocan on a host of issues. But by emphasizing, literally, just focusing on that Buy America thing and making it real, he prevailed. This is a very, very potent political issue. And what Sherrod Brown is doing is a much bigger deal than just the fight of the moment. And I think it's one of the reasons why Republicans are running and hiding, even Trump.
So if Donald Trump doesn't follow through on this, if this is something where Donald Trump does a big infrastructure bill, but he starts building roads with and bridges with Chinese steel and other inferior products, much like he did with his casino in Las Vegas. I think that's going to hurt his brand.
It can to some extent. I mean, he might still be putting some people to work, and he gets some credit for that, you know, or not he personally, but, you know, the process. But, yes, it can be an issue. And, you know, here's the bottom line. These are complicated. I'm going to give Trump a little space here and say, this is complicated stuff. We export, we import. I understand, you know, you're really talking, you know, that it's not as simple as a line on a piece of paper. But if the basic understanding of an infrastructure investment, a massive infrastructure investment in America, isn't that you put tons of people to work on the physical projects themselves, but also on the production of the materials that make those projects possible. If that doesn't happen, then he has broken the core promise, because people understand infrastructure as a commitment in this regard. And yeah, I think it's a very big deal. Could even be a deal breaker. I can't begin to emphasize to you, despite what you and I may say about this carrier deal, Trump got a big boost out of it. The idea of him putting people, you know, ahead, getting people back to work, protecting jobs, that's very, very central to who he is. If there is any doubt about that, any question about that brand, that image he's created, he becomes politically very vulnerable very fast.
All right, one final question here. What is this? What is this about? Sort of an inept old man who's the increasingly right-wing governor of Iowa being given the ambassador to the China Post. What is that all about?
How can you call Terry Branstad inept? Beating every Democrat in Iowa throughout the history of politics.
He has not been politically inept at winning elections, but he is politically
very good at it.
He's an inept governor.
Horrible governor who spent most of the last 4 years, or last 3 or 4 years, trying to wreck Medicare and Medicaid programs.
All right, why is he going to be ambassador to China?
To tell you, it's a funny little story. The president of China has had long-term involvement, and actually many Chinese leaders have had long-term involvement with Iowa.
Didn't the president of China live in Iowa for a little while?
I believe so. But much of the, like a substantial number of the leaders of China, because in China they still have a huge interest in ag issues, much that the U.S. should have. And so there's a connection there. And to his credit, you may say whatever you want about Branstad. To his credit, Branstad recognized this a long time ago and nurtured it and developed personal friendships with the elite leadership class in China.
Now,
and so he will arrive in China as a known entity who has the potential, certainly not the certainty, to, you know, kind of paper over and ease some of the tension.
He understands that that pizza buffet chain that's not in China, right?
Pizza Ranch?
What's that? The Pizza Ranch. He understands the Pizza Ranch is not in China. Has anyone told him that yet?
That's what you say now. things could be changing. Why? Pizza Ranch Beijing could be opening any moment now. And you know, this is a big deal about the Branstad getting this gig. It does alter Iowa politics in some important ways. But there's one other thing that people need to understand. Terry Branstad really didn't like Ted Cruz. And back in January, when hardly anybody was paying attention to Terry Branstad, Terry Branstad started saying reasonably nice things about Donald Trump.
I remember.
He never really went against Trump. And Trump is a blue state that flipped red. And so there's a whole bunch of reasons why Donald Trump practically and politically like Terry Branstad.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming on SlysOffice.com.
A pleasure, my friend.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.